Welcome to an excerpt of the CME activity, Adjunctive Pharmacotherapies for Antidepressant Non-Responders, Risks and Benefits, which is certified by Medscape and presented by Michael E. Thace, MD. Dr. Thace is a professor of psychiatry, University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Dr. Thace has disclosed the following relevant financial relationships. He served as an advisor or consultant for Alkermes, AstraZeneca Pharmaceuticals, Bristol-Myers Squibb Company, Eli Lilly and Company, Day, Forest Laboratories, Gerson Lehrman Group, GuidePoint Global, H. Lundbeck AS, Medavante, Merck & Company, Neuronetics, Otsuka Pharmaceutical, Ortho McNeil Janssen Pharmaceuticals, PAM Lab, Pfizer, PGX Health, Shire, Supernus Pharmaceuticals, Takeda Pharmaceuticals North America, and Transcept Pharmaceuticals. He received grants for clinical research from the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, Eli Lilly and Company, Forest Laboratories, GlaxoSmithKline, the National Institute of Mental Health, and Otsuka Pharmaceutical. He served as a speaker or a member of a speaker's bureau for AstraZeneca Pharmaceuticals, Bristol-Myers Squibb Company, Day, Eli Lilly and Company, Merck & Company, and Pfizer. He owns stock options, or bonds in Medavante. He received royalties from the American Psychiatric Foundation, Guilford Publications, Herald House, and W.W. Norton & Company. His spouse is employed by Embryon. Dr. Thace does intend to discuss off-label uses of drugs, mechanical devices, biologics, or diagnostics approved by the FDA for use in the United States. Dr. Thace does not intend to discuss investigational drugs, mechanical devices, biologics, or diagnostics not approved by the FDA for use in the United States. The purpose of this activity is to describe the circumstances in which augmentation is an appropriate strategy for treating unremitted depression, as well as the pharmacologic options available for augmentation. This activity is supported by Otsuka America Pharmaceutical. To participate in the CME activity, please go to medscape.org/features/audio and select the title.
Hello. I'm Michael Thace. I'm a professor of psychiatry at the University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine. I'm also a member of the medical staff of the Philadelphia Veterans Affairs Medical Center and an adjunct professor of psychiatry at the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center. Today we'll be talking about adjunctive pharmacotherapies for antidepressant non-responders, risk and benefits. Let's take an overview of antidepressant treatment. Although we have many effective medications, none are universally effective. Indeed, in the STAR-D study, fully 40% of our patients had not remitted at the end of 4 treatment steps. And of those who were more difficult to treat, they were at greater risk for relapse. And across a year, 40 to 70% of the STAR-D antidepressant responders did relapse with continued antidepressant treatment. So we've got lots of SSRIs and SNRIs as our treatments of first choice. What do we need to do, or what can we do for those who don't respond to those first-line treatments? Well, we could switch to another alternate first-line treatment. We could augment with a medication that's not used as an antidepressant primarily. Or we could combine 2 first-line antidepressants to make a novel or unique treatment combination. And although these strategies, augmentation and combination strategies, are typically used in everyday practice, often the evidence base supporting their use is much more limited than might be appreciated, as we'll talk about a little bit later. Here we see the outcome of the patients through the first treatment stage in STAR-D. And this is a citalopram treatment trial, one of our first-line antidepressants, in doses up to 60 milligrams a day across up to 12 to 14 weeks of therapy. And as you can see, only about a third of the patients remitted, another 20% responded, and the remainder did not. If you look at this in terms of a patient needs standpoint, we need treatments to help responders obtain remission, and to help non-responders first respond and then subsequently obtain remission. Of the strategies that were studied in STAR-D, you can see that with each successive strategy, there was a reduction in the likelihood of remission, and this was particularly true for both the monotherapy or the switching strategies as well as the adjunctive or augmentation strategies. So this therapeutic decrement seemed to hold true as we went from second to third to fourth line interventions. So one of the essential questions is, should we switch or should we augment? Now, obviously, parsimony favors switching. It's better to do one thing well than to try to do two things at the same time. However, adjunctive strategies are faster and typically easier to implement. You're avoiding a washout and cross-titration. Although we had hoped to answer the question, should we switch or should we augment with STAR-D, we weren't able to because the STAR-D study did not use a standard random assignment scheme. Rather, we used equipoise stratified randomization, and too few of patients typically agreed to be in the switch or augment comparisons. In addition to pharmacotherapies, various kinds of psychotherapies can be included as switch or augmenting strategies, although I won't be talking further about psychotherapies today. Now, if you just peek at STAR-D, it looks like switching was less effective than augmenting, but this is the standard apples and oranges comparison. The patients who agreed to be switched were not the same patients as the patients agreed to have various augmentation strategies. Generally, the patients who asked to be switched had less improvement and poorer tolerability than the patients who were agreeable to remain on a medication and to switch, or rather to have one or the other of the augmentation studies. So even though your eyes may suggest that the augmenting strategies were about a third again more effective than the switching strategies, that simply isn't a valid conclusion. The patients in the comparison on the left are different from the patients in the comparison on the right and can only be compared with some hazard. Now, what was true, whether you were in a switch or an augment strategy, was that the patients with high levels of persistent anxiety did poorly with whatever we had to offer in STAR-D. And here you see that for each of the comparisons, the patients with high levels of anxiety symptoms did worse than the patients who had lower levels of anxiety symptoms. This really indicates that if we need a particularly good treatment for a particular presentation, it would be that for patients with high levels of persistent anxiety. So let's focus on the adjunctive therapies. As I mentioned, they're often easier to implement because they avoid a washout. And this can have pragmatic benefits in day-to-day practice when you need to rapidly get the patient better. Obviously, if the first treatment has been partially successful and well-tolerated, it builds on the success of that first treatment. And we think we can at least pick, based on clinical symptoms, targets for particular adjunctive treatment strategies. So if the number one symptom is insomnia, for example, you might pick an adjunctive strategy that is good for sleep. This slide covers several of the most widely used adjunctive treatment strategies, from the older era lithium, other mood stabilizers, and thyroid hormone, from the newer era various kinds of newer generation medications such as modafinil or methylfolate, or the second generation antipsychotics. Let's take a little look at some of the evidence in this area. Here you can see a meta-analysis of lithium effects, and as I hope you can see from this forest plot, most of the studies are positive. The overall conclusion is that lithium has a significant adjunctive treatment benefit for patients taking antidepressants, and I think the only real limitation from this data set is that most of the studies involved patients treated with antidepressants. This next slide summarizes the results from a meta-analysis of studies done with thyroid augmentation. I think importantly, whether you look on the left or you look on the right, there appears to be a benefit for thyroid augmentation about the same magnitude as was observed with lithium augmentation. The very same criticism that these studies primarily involve patients treated with tricyclic antidepressants is true. And I think importantly, as you can see, that when you only limit your attention to the most highly controlled studies, the apparent advantage of thyroid augmentation dissipates a little bit, but it's still likely to be a clinically meaningful effect. Now, one of the second-level comparisons in STAR-D involved adjunct with lithium versus adjunct with thyroid in patients who had not responded to two treatment trials. And as I hope you can see, the numeric advantages favored thyroid hormone over lithium augmentation. These were not statistically significant on the primary dependent measure, but trended in that direction. And importantly, thyroid augmentation was better tolerated, and patients were more likely to complete the treatment trial. So it had increased benefits or added value in terms of patient adherence. So although the advantage for thyroid augmentation was modest, it was, I think, a real advantage. And I suspect that thyroid augmentation may well be underused in 2011 or 2012 as compared to a previous era. Now, in contrast to previous era, second-generation antipsychotics are being increasingly used today, and there is evidence from at least two positive placebo-controlled trials for four different second-generation antipsychotics. One of them, risperidone, is not approved for the FDA. Another, olanzapine, is only approved in combination with fluoxetine. And the remaining two, aripiprazole and quetiapine extended release, are approved for adjunctive therapy with a range of antidepressants. And here's a forest plot for the placebo-controlled studies of second-generation antipsychotic adjunctive therapy. And as I hope you can see, that all four medications effective, clear conclusion, these treatments work. And I think in short, the question isn't really whether they work or not, but it's with whom should we use them, and when they work, how long should they be maintained? Are they cost effective? Have we fully gotten our hands around what the ultimate risk are, both for tardive dyskinesia as well as metabolic complications? And is there ever going to be a way to better match which patients should be treated with which particular medication? So although we now have second-generation antipsychotics as established adjunctive therapies for patients who've not adequately benefited from antidepressants, there's still a lot of work to be done. So let's wrap up with a little summary about adjunctive therapy. We target persistent symptoms. We make rational choices based on the patient's symptoms, the tolerability of the antidepressant they were on before, and the presumed mechanisms of action of both the primary and the adjunctive therapies. We choose strategies that target residual symptoms and either address or minimize the side effect burden. And when effective, we've got to use our best clinical judgment about how long the adjunctive therapy should be maintained. So to summarize, sequential trials of current antidepressants help about two-thirds of our patients with major depressive disorder. We need additional strategies for those who aren't helped with our available medications. One of those additional strategies that's really increasingly used over the past decade has been adjunctive therapy with second-generation antipsychotics. Other adjunctive therapies include older proven strategies such as lithium and thyroid hormone. Although we now know, I think beyond a shadow of a doubt, that the second-generation antipsychotics are effective adjunctive strategies, research is urgently needed to establish the cost effectiveness, optimal duration, and safety of the SGAs for patients with incomplete remission depression. Thank you for joining me for this CME activity. To earn credit, click on the link below.
Thank you for listening to this excerpt of the CME activity, Adjunctive Pharmacotherapies for Antidepressant Nonresponders, Risks and Benefits. To participate in the CME activity, please go to medscape.org/features/audio and select the title.